ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Restore Health and Counseling salutes the men and women in uniform who've answered the call for our freedoms. Let's give them the hero's welcome they deserve as they have fought hard to restore peace. America's troops are our angels of protection, so stand up and salute them proudly. That's from Restore Health and Counseling at 4705 Paris Street, serving Northeast Denver with complete substance abuse counseling for adolescents to adult and for private as well as professional drug, alcohol screening and treatment and rehabilitation. Visit us at www.rhctherapy.com or call 303-373-1188.
Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, wellness, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245.
And here's the Freedom Network, and a lot of exciting things are happening in the world today. The only trouble is that most Americans, unless they have somebody to guide them to point out what's happening, really just see all these as sort of incidental things and can't actually connect the dots. Well, it was announced over the weekend that the Pope Benedict is going to resign. Now, this is the first time that a Catholic Pope has resigned in 600 years. But for some reason, at the end of this month of February, why the Catholic Pope is going to resign and there'll be a new Pope. Why is that significant as far as you and I are concerned if we're not Catholic? Why, very simply, because, of course, in the 1500s, there was a Father Malachi, and Father Malachi had a vision, and he talked about how all the subsequent popes, there'd be, I think, 115 of them, 111 of them, something like that. And then, of course, the last person after the last pope would be the Antichrist, and or at least would be the false prophet. And he would be here at the time of the Antichrist. And, of course, is it that we've had 115 popes, and the next one will be this long-prophesied evil person coming to lead the Catholic Church? Now, is that accurate? Is that real? This was a prophecy 500 years ago, and yet many books have been written about this. And why is the Catholic Pope resigning at this time? Well, he says he's communicated with God. He's getting old. He's getting feeble. He really can't continue on as the Pope. You need to be vibrant and have more energy than he does. And yet, all the other popes have died in office. Certainly, Pope John Paul II was very, very feeble, and yet he continued in his position until he died. But for the first time in 600 years, a Catholic Pope at this very time, this month, has stated he's going to resign and there'll be a new Pope appointed. And if you believe in the prophecy of Father Malachi, the next Pope, of course, will be associated with the Antichrist. Our telephone number is 1-877-254-7524, 877-254-7524. We're going to do open lines during the first part of the program because William Grigg will be calling in later on, but he's got to get his children off to school, and we're going to do open lines until he gets here. So if you have a question or comment, would like to give us a call, why, we'd like to hear from you. But I do believe we're entering into very, very difficult times. I believe, of course, that America is morally bankrupt. I believe America is financially bankrupt, and the only thing that's keeping our economy from totally collapsing is the fact that the Federal Reserve System is creating or utilizing $85 billion a month And is, of course, spending $45 billion of that on the Treasury bills, just to, so the American Treasury can pay its bills. The American Treasury doesn't have the money. And if they raise the taxes enough so that they can make up the $1 billion shortfall we have, why would take that money out of the economy and crash it? And if they don't raise, don't do that, why, of course, they can't pay their bills. Furthermore, of course, the Federal Reserve putting another $40 billion a month into the banking industry, and that's, of course, to prop up our banks, because most of our banks are actually bankrupt as well. Our major banks do not have adequate assets to cover the massive loans that they've made in the past that has created an artificial prosperity in the United States, ladies and gentlemen. But it is all an artificial prosperity. And, of course, whether this money is being printed, whether this money is based upon the massive loans that the major banks are making to the Federal Reserve. You see, there's about $2 trillion the major banks are holding. If they let that money out, we would have runaway inflation. The reason we don't have runaway inflation is because the major banks cannot put out all the money that has been created artificially. And the same thing is true with our corporations. The major corporations are holding about $1.5 trillion, and they're not investing that. They're holding this. Some of it is deposited in the banking system, and a lot of that money in the banking system is being deposited with the Federal Reserve. So we will not have runaway inflation yet. But it's coming. It's only a matter of time. It's not a matter of if, but when, because we have a totally fraudulent money system. I mean, there's no incidence in all history where a nation is turned away from a currency based upon gold and silver to a fiat money system, which is what we have, where that nation has not eventually been destroyed. They had a fraudulent monetary system in ancient Greece 500 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem, and the system collapsed financially. They had a fraudulent monetary system in the western half of the Roman Empire, starting certainly about 200 AD, and by 300 AD, where they had to have wage and price controls, and at 400 AD, 476, as a matter of fact. 476 AD, why Rome fell. But that was only the western half of the Roman Empire. We never talk about the fact that Diocletian divided the Roman Empire into two parts so that it would be more manageable. And the eastern segment, centered in Constantinople, maintained a gold-backed currency, and their society existed until the 1400s because they had a sound monetary system. There's no better way to destroy a great nation than to corrupt the monetary system, and they have intentionally and purposely and maliciously destroyed the monetary system of what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Our number is 877-254-7524. 877-254-7524. If you have a question or comment, why, give us a call. But will certainly the monetary system begin to collapse this year? I don't know. But there's so many things out there. There's a very real and looming danger of an electromagnetic pulse attack. I mean, look and see the seething cauldron that are over there in the Near East and the Middle East, and certainly the tempo of violence between Israel and Syria is increasing. And then, of course, the very real possibility of a war with Iran, and Iran has been practicing on how to carry out an EMP attack on the United States. We never talk about it. I wonder why.
At this time of year, health and happiness is at the top of everyone's list. Staying in shape and lowering fat intake, reducing the chance of heart disease and early illness. Exercising daily along with a commitment to better health and nutrition will help you keep fit, not only for the new year, but for life. That's from Anytime Fitness, where we're always working to make our area a safer place to live, work, and raise a family. That's Anytime Fitness, 325 Winneka Parkway in Lafayette. For information, call 720-890-7437. Great Plains Power has been providing reliable electrical power systems in the Rocky Mountain area since 1992. Our systems rely on the sun to help make you self-reliant for your power needs. Solar energy can be scaled to fit any situation, from complete power independence to backup power for the short term. Our expertise focuses on standalone power, but we have extensive experience with utility interactive systems as well. Custom-tailored capabilities as modest as emergency lighting all the way to commercial-scale power. Great Plains Power is a full-service company. We service everything we sell. We provide and design turnkey packages, custom-designed system, and parts for do-it-yourself. With more than 20 years of specialized experience at your disposal, let us know what your power concerns or goals are. Reach us by phone or the internet. Call 303-239-9963. That's 303-239-9963. Or go to greatplainssolar.com. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings." Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1 through 3.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the American Freedom Network, and our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, is 877-254-7524, 877-254-7524, and we're waiting. Oh, I hope that's William Gregg. Hi, hello?
Good morning, Dr. Stan. It is William Gregg.
Oh, fine. Thank you so very much. It's good to have you with us. Well, we're going to be talking this morning certainly about our judicial system, because basically we have real problems. We once had a very dependable judicial system where, of course, the foundation of our law was based upon the Constitution, but a group of evil people have seized control of our government and have really distorted law and justice here in the United States. So, William, you pick up the story.
Well, Dr. Stan, what has happened, particularly since the late the mid-1900s, the middle part of the 20th century, beginning in the 1940s and 1950s, is that the traditional doctrine that governed our legal system has been supplanted with a different perspective that we could call positivism. And positivism, it's a term with which most people are not familiar, refers to a perspective on the law which dictates that whatever the government decrees should be considered self-evident truth and the correct approach to any conflict. It doesn't have to be rooted in an understanding of natural law or what Blackstone, he was an 18th century British jurist who's very influential in the Founding Fathers, what Blackstone described as the laws of nature, which are discernible through reason and revelation. In other words, something which traces its origins back ultimately to the Bible, to the Ten Commandments, the two great commandments, the Golden Rule. That's natural law. That's the soil in which the American Constitution was planted, in which it flourished. And it was uprooted almost entirely, beginning in the late 19th century in this country. And by 1945, 1950 or so, the official philosophy or perspective of the professional legal caste in this country, that is to say the American Bar Association and federal associations from which judges are drawn and prosecutors are drawn, had become this doctrine of positivism. And this is dangerous, of course, because positivism is rooted in statism. It's an outgrowth of the idea that the government itself decrees the limits of its own powers and provides its own system and standards for checking and reigning in its powers. And every governing elite, whether you're talking about people who are as noble as Jefferson and Madison and Washington, or people who are as depraved as those who are governing us today, is made up of fallen, flawed, sinful human beings who have this unfortunate tendency to want to enlarge their power at the expense of others. That's what Christians refer to as sin nature, or what St. Augustine called the libido dominandi, the appetite to rule, to dominate other people. It's something to which all flesh is heir. And even somebody like George Washington understood that he was not immune to the blandishments of power, which is why on many occasions, if he heard people flattering him, he would leave the room, lest he be contaminated by exposure to opinions that would lead him to glorify himself at his own sight. You don't get that today with the type of people who become elected politicians, let alone people who become judges or prosecutors. Today, sort of the default personality type is the sort of person who believes that he or she is entitled to receive that kind of adulation. And they don't believe that they're bound by the written law, let alone by the natural law, the law that's inscribed on our hearts by our Creator. The American judicial system is the descendant of the Anglo-Saxon system of law, which, going back into 12th and 11th century antiquity, or back into the first millennium of the Christian era, is the direct descendant of this biblical perspective. The Bible, at the time, of course, wasn't written and available to most people, but the teachings of Christianity certainly were, and the teachings from the Sermon on the Mount regarding the two great commandments and the way that we're supposed to treat each other at law and in equity were certainly part of the common heritage of what would be sort of the primordial British society. And by 1215, with the Magna Carta, when the British barons at Runnymede imposed the law on King John, it became clear that there had been this tradition of centuries, if not millennia, of course, but centuries going back to the beginning of the Christian era. There had been this tradition which was understood that all people are supposed to be governed by the same law, that kings are subject to the same law as those whom they rule, and that the purpose of courts is to adjudicate disputes among people from a perspective of equity. And beginning with the Magna Carta, there were these guarantees in a written document, that limited the types of powers that could be exercised by all officials, whether you're talking about kings or magistrates. And by the 1700s, by the early 1700s in Great Britain, there was a renewed and more forceful emphasis on the idea of equity before the law, equality before the law. And you started to see in the late 1600s a number of decisions being handed down that consciously restrained the powers of government institutions. And it was in that ferment that the American movement for independence took root. And by the early, actually by the mid-1700s, 1750s, 1760s, 1770s, the American colonists had absorbed the common law tradition of Great Britain and institutionalized, among other things, this wonderful body called the grand jury. Now, what is a grand jury? A grand jury is a body independent of government control in the British system. This is where the precedent set with the Magna Carta at Runnymede is so important. Granted, these were elite people, the barons who got together at Runnymede, but the point is they weren't controlled by the king. They didn't answer to him, and they were imposing a check rein on the king's power from outside the king's direct line of jurisdiction. They were asserting the power of the people over the government to which they had delegated certain tasks. In this case, they were talking about a monarchy. They were recognizing the monarchy as an instrument of the people for governed by law. That's a very important provision here. It's the law ultimately that rules, not the people as an unembodied force or the king himself. By the 18th century here in the United States, you had the grand jury, which was a body which would be assembled in order to force the government to prove its case against an accused individual. Not only that the accused individual had done something that the state was calling a crime, but also that the law which was being applied to that person was just. And this became a very important matter because you see in the trial of John Peter Zenger, who was a publisher, he published a number of broadsides and newspapers in the early 18th century against colonial governors here in the American colonies. In the trial of John Peter Zenger, he was put on trial for what was called seditious libel, which was speaking evil of the government. It's, of course, our oldest and proudest journalistic tradition in American society is using the power of the pen, the power of the printing press, the power of the tongue, the pulpit, the soapbox to condemn abuses by government authority. Well, he was being persecuted, actually, but he was supposedly being prosecuted for seditious libel. And on two separate occasions, he was acquitted by grand juries of his peers as citizens, who insisted that what was going on was not an instance of trying to put a lawbreaker behind bars, but simply a corrupt and ambitious governor trying to punish somebody who had criticized his abuses. That's where the tradition of what's called jury nullification really took form here in the United States. And if you don't have a jury, either a grand jury or a petty jury, with the ability to exercise this function called jury nullification, you don't really have a jury. What you have is a type of body that ratifies the decisions being made by a judge or by a prosecutor. And the most important function of the jury, once again, is that of forcing the government to prove its case against an accused person. It has to be oriented toward the proposition that the accused is innocent until compelling reason is found to consider him to be guilty. And in 1796, if memory serves, one of the very first rulings handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court under the then newly created American constitutional system, it was recognized by the Supreme Court of the United States, and this is a founding era ruling, that grand juries and petty juries alike had the power to render a verdict not only on the facts of the case, the specific allegations against the defendant, but also on the justice or the legitimacy of the law. This was unfortunately overturned in 1894, about a century later, by a Supreme Court of a very different disposition, very different composition, in a ruling called SPARF, S-P-A-R-F, versus the United States. And in that ruling, the Supreme Court said that it was not necessary to inform jurors of the full extent of their rights and responsibilities under the law. Now, the earlier case in 1796 not only said that jury nullification was a legitimate function and indeed a moral duty, a legal duty of the juries, but also that federal judges had to inform juries of the extent of their powers. This is something that was an unevenly practiced but very firmly established principle in American law for almost a century, and it was whittled back by the SPARF ruling of 1894. And the SPARF ruling simply said, well, this is something the juries can do, but you don't have to go out of your way as a judge to inform them of this aspect of their authority. By the 1940s and 1950s, grand juries had been captured by prosecutors as an instrument of the prosecution. And that, in my opinion, invalidated the whole purpose of having grand juries. Now, I don't mean by that to say that you do not have grand juries today that carry out a legitimate function as skeptics. They're supposed to be skeptical of a prosecutor's case against a client, or that they do not carry out legitimate investigatory roles. There's another aspect of the grand juries in the Anglo-Saxon tradition that has fallen into disrepair. That is, the grand juries could call themselves into existence for the purpose of investigating government abuses and corruption. During the early years of the 20th century, late years of the 19th century, as a matter of fact, the grand jury was the primary avenue of legitimate reform. They weren't being run by the so-called progressivists for the most part. They were being run by citizens who were sick of seeing embedded corruption in large municipal governments. There was a years-long grand jury in Minneapolis, for instance, that forced reform on judicial bodies and on the local municipal government and on the police department, which at that time, as unfortunately today, was and remains a haven of corruption and violent criminality. But by the 1940s and 1950s, owing to reforms that were imposed upon the system from above by the federal government, under the influence of these so-called progressives for the most part, the grand jury was reconfigured to be simply the legal arsenal and the legal support system for the prosecutor. And so you no longer have a system where the grand jury is supposed to instruct the prosecutor as to whether or not there is a legitimate cause to prosecute a defendant in criminal court by providing an indictment or what is called a presentment. It's pretty much the same thing. Today, what a grand jury does for the most part is simply ratify whatever it is that the prosecutor seeks to do. And once again, I find myself constrained to point out there are exceptions. There is a grand jury that has been operating in Houston over the last 2 years that's been investigating a deep-laid scandal involving the use of a completely unreliable breathalyzer machine by the local police that is generating false positives by the hundreds and leading people to spend a whole lot of money they shouldn't be spending to defend themselves against entirely bogus DUI citations, and leading, of course, to convictions of DUI that have led to fines and, in some instances, jail times. Certainly, a lot of disruption of the productive life of people who've done nothing that would be within the legitimate purview of the police or the state. So you do have, in Houston, one limited example of a grand jury that's been doing good work. And occasionally you find grand juries that are populated by people who are usefully skeptical of what the government is saying. Unfortunately, that is the exception. And with respect to trial juries, what's sometimes referred to as petty juries, you have an even worse track record at the federal level, where it is all but unheard of for the federal government to lose a case against a prosecutor. It's conceived, the federal system was conceived to be a very limited application. There are only a couple of crimes specified in the Constitution that fall within the legitimate jurisdiction of the federal government, such things as counterfeiting and treason. And there is a reference in Article 1, Section 8 to Congress having natural jurisdiction to investigate piracy and crimes on the high seas and other violations of what is referred to as the law of nations. Now, that's not something your typical American is going to be involved in. But unfortunately, the federal government...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg right here at the American Freedom Network.
Strong's Insurance recognizes and salutes the men and women in uniform standing tall for our freedom. Let's remember them this February in our thoughts and prayers. Their efforts help keep America strong. We live in the land of the free because of the brave. This message is presented by Strong's Insurance, offering an invisible blanket of protection that covers you and your family and your home and business and car. It becomes beautifully visible when you need it. Enjoy complete but not overlapping coverage for everything you care about through Strong's Insurance in Brighton. DRM Real Estate Advisors in Windsor would like to take this time to say thank you to all of the brave men and women in the armed forces who have served our country. Business owners, consider hiring veterans, our most dependable force. And to those heroes back home from missions abroad, you know that your dedication, selflessness, and courage are appreciated. May God bless America. This message is from DRM Real Estate Advisors in Windsor, reminding all of us that our freedom has never been free.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
Great Plains Power has been providing reliable electrical power systems in the Rocky Mountain area since 1992. Our systems rely on the sun to help make you self-reliant for your power needs. Solar energy can be scaled to fit any situation, from complete power independence to backup power for the short term. Our expertise focuses on standalone power, but we have extensive experience with utility interactive systems as well. Custom-tailored capabilities as modest as emergency lighting all the way to commercial-scale power. Great Plains Power is a full-service company. We service everything we sell. We provide and design turnkey packages, custom-designed system, and parts for do-it-yourself. With more than 20 years of specialized experience at your disposal, let us know what your power concerns or goals are. Reach us by phone or the internet. Call 303-239-9963. That's 303-239-9963. Or go to greatplainssolar.com. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness of Him and cried out, saying, "This was He of whom I said, He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me." The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 14 and 15.
Well, Dr. Dan, here at the American Network, our guest this morning is William Grigg, and we're talking about the grand juries and how the whole legal system here in America has been altered slowly, step by step, very, very subtly, so that the average American doesn't understand that the once great legal system we had based upon grand juries and and certainly justice for all, equal justice for all, no longer exists. In the federal court system, they get a 97% conviction rate, and they would use this, our federal judicial system, to target people who they don't like. We saw that with Dr. Brzezinski. They wanted to send him to prison for 300 years. What was his crime? He had an effective treatment for cancer, and, of course, the people in the Federal Drug Administration wanted to give that to a favorite corporation, and basically they wanted to put Dr. Brzezinski in prison so that he could not challenge the infringement on his patents. And they used the legal system to target individuals, and believe me, they do that today. Why would any court system get a 97% conviction rate? Because it's corrupt. And our legal system is corrupt. And where is the outcry from our ministers and from those who should, and our politicians? It's of course, it's muted. And, of course, it's deafening in its silence. Well, go right ahead.
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan, and that's a very lamentable turn of affairs. For your listeners who are interested in getting an overview of some of the topics that we're discussing and a suggestion regarding 10 points that we could follow to bring about material reform of the judicial system, there's a very useful website, judicialreformnow.com. Once again, that's judicialreformnow, one word, judicialreformnow.com. It begins with this 10-point or 10-plank action program that would be followed by citizens in writing to legislatures, writing to state legislatures, and, of course, the federal Congress. The Senate, of course, has the most important role here at the federal level. But your state legislatures, with respect to what goes on in each of the 50 states, would be one very important focus of our efforts. But it begins with the legislative reversal of this SPARF decision, S-P-A-R-F, from 1894, which began the process of doing away with the role played by fully informed juries, fully informed and duly empowered citizen bodies who meet for the purpose of forcing the government to prove, first of all, the facts of the case against the defendant. Juries are supposed to be biased in favor of the defendant. That's one of the essential tenets of Western law. They have the right as jurors to force the state to prove its case, because the defendant is innocent before the law until the jury is convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that he has committed the acts that the government has accused him of committing. Furthermore, the jury also has the plenary authority, that is to say the open-ended and unqualified authority, to decide whether the law being applied is just. That is just as important as proving the facts of a case, proving that a given law is something that is consonant with the law of nature, as Blackstone pointed out. Blackstone, once again, the British jurist who is so influential on the American founders, a British professor of law, he pointed out that if an enactment by a government isn't in harmony with the natural law, that is to say God's law, then it's not a legitimate law. And that's the understanding that is the essential, indispensable backdrop for the American jury system. Unfortunately, the SPARF ruling of 1894 began the process of supplanting the natural law with this doctrine of positivism, which the government itself is supposedly the supreme lawgiver. It's subject only to its own whims, and the whims, that is, of the fallen and ambitious people who run a given government. So this 10-point program at judicialreformnow.com begins with the legislative reversal of the SPARF ruling. Now, state by state, there has been some progress. New Hampshire last year, for instance, enacted a measure explicitly recognizing the rights and duty. That's a very important element of this. It's a duty, not merely a privilege, of jurors to render a verdict based on both the facts of the case and the legitimacy of the law in question. So New Hampshire became, to the best of my knowledge, the first state in recent memory in any case explicitly to recognize the right and duty of jury nullification. Nullification is practiced in a lot of jurisdictions sua sponte, that is to say, voluntarily and with no prompting by self-selected jury pools. There was a case, actually two cases recently, one in Texas, once again in Houston. We talked earlier about what's going on with the grand jury in Houston. But there was a case in Houston, another case in Montana, I can't remember what city in Montana, last year, within a couple of months of each other, where the jury pools, the pools of potential jurors during jury selection, were polled by prosecutors over their willingness to convict people who were charged with just petty, picayune, trivial narcotics possession offenses involving a very small amount of marijuana. Bear in mind, we're talking about this happening in the context of a country right now that's rethinking the wisdom of this monumental exercise in unfettered stupidity called the war on drugs. And so in Montana and, I believe, once again in Houston, there were two separate instances in which prosecutors were trying to charge people with felonies. A felony, of course, is a crime punishable by a year in prison or a fine of more than $1,000. Because they were found in possession of these minuscule amounts of marijuana, and having pulled the juries, they found out that none of the jurors were interested in sending somebody to prison to live at public expense, of course, because they were in possession of this infinitesimal amount of a substance that is prescribed by the government, that the possession of which doesn't actually injure another human being. In other words, they said, we're not going to send somebody to prison for something that isn't a crime. It's a vice. It's a stupid thing to do. It's something that may injure himself, but the government doesn't have natural or legitimate jurisdiction over injuries that you do to yourself. And so you have case-by-case jury nullification going on. That's a healthy thing. But New Hampshire, to the best of my knowledge, is the first state in recent memory to make jury nullification part of the standards and practice of that state's judicial system. And that's all to the good. Unfortunately, at the federal level, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, we have literally a Soviet-caliber apparatus that creates defendants and convicts out of defendants on the basis of things that don't withstand examination as if they were actual crimes, or if they constitute crimes, don't really fall within the legitimate jurisdiction of the federal government. There was just within the last 2 days this incident in actually the coda to this case in Pennsylvania involving a really weird feud among Amish people that included acts of what I would consider to be assault, where people forcibly had their beard shaved. And in the Amish faith, this is a terrible assault, not only on the integrity of the person, but also on that person's religious beliefs. But this was transmuted by the federal court into a capital offense. Now, capital means not only of crime for which a person could be deprived of life summarily through execution, but also somebody who could find himself in prison for the natural lifespan behind bars. If they put you in prison for the rest of your life, that's a capital offense, according to the more ancient use of the expression. The man who is identified as the ringleader in this really strange feud originally was facing a life sentence for shaving off another man's beard. That was considered to be disproportionate, so he's now, quote-unquote, merely going to serve 15 years in prison for
and
doing
what sort
something
of madness
that
is this? Why, I mean, certainly, I mean, it's a stupid thing to shave off somebody else's beard, but 15 years in prison, and we're going to have to pay for that? I mean, this is totally madness. Well, we live in a world gone mad, ladies and gentlemen, and some of the people who are the maddest are the ones who control our legal system. We'll be back in just a moment. And where's the outcry?
Are you prepared for the coming chaos? Whether you are planning a strategic retreat or you have one in progress, Square Construction would be pleased to offer our assistance. With nearly 30 years of construction experience, Square Construction can help with design, engineering, and permitting issues, as well as a host of general contracting services from foundation to finish work. For a limited time, we are offering exclusive discounts to the listeners of Randy's program. For a no-obligation consultation, please call Doug at 303-517-8742 or drop an email to strategicretreats@gmail.com.
If catastrophe struck, would your family be prepared? Are you confident you wouldn't react in a panic? Is there one place to get all of your emergency supplies? Ferris Survival encourages you to have confidence through preparation, not panic through crisis. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing quality, realistic preparedness supplies at an affordable price. Go online, stop by, or call 303-781-0343. Ferris Survival.
Passover is coming on Saturday, March the 23rd, and you're invited to celebrate Yeshua's Passover with the Beth Messiah Congregation. Again, Passover is March 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Ramada Plaza Hotel. Call 1-800-205-6245 for reservations. Deadline is March the 8th. Main entrees are lamb and turkey. Adults are $35. Children 10 to 12 are $15. Children 6 to 9 are $13. Children 5 and under are free. Call today 1-800-205-6245 for your Passover reservations.
what? Good, clean, delicious water that's alkaline high pH that I can make in my own home, and I don't have to carry in all those heavy bottles or taste the water. You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. With a Kangen water machine at your fingertips, you and your family can have clean, delicious, ionized, alkaline, high pH Kangen water, and so much more. Change your water, change your life. Call Rebecca Starnes at 720-209-9017. Again, 720-209-9017.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network. Our guest this morning was William Greig, and William, we go right ahead.
We were talking before the break about this insane case. You used the expression insanity, and I think you're exactly right, Dr. Stan, involving a group of Amish men who took part in some really strange little internecine feud that involved shaving the beards off of a number of people. The man identified as the ringleader was originally charged with what, if you understand the true extent of the expression, would be considered a capital offense because they sought to put him in prison for the rest of his life. Instead, this man, who is in late middle age, now faces 15 years in prison for doing something that could be considered, reduced to its essentials, a form of petty assault and battery, admittedly for the purpose of humiliating another person, that would best be served, I think, through civil court rather than criminal court to begin with. If you're talking about a grievous assault on bodily integrity, you're talking about a crime, you're talking about something like this, it's not as serious in terms of the physical battery involved. The viciousness, the intent to humiliate, of course, is a terrible thing, but that's something that's more tortious than criminal. But this was turned into a crime, it was turned into a felony, and eventually became a matter for federal jurisdiction, one supposes, because it was treated as a hate crime, in spite of the fact that both people who were involved in this belonged to the same subpopulation, they belonged to the same self-identified community. But 64 years, I believe, was the original, or actually that would have been life, and then 64 years, then 15 years, that was the descending rate that was being offered by the prosecutors of payment for this crime. And that's a really good illustration of how federal prosecutors work. Only in one out of every 212 cases does the defendant in a federal trial prevail. And one of the reasons that this happens is because federal prosecutors are taught to multiply charges on the basis of the same set of facts and the same overt act in order to generate a huge overhang of potential prison time to extort, and I use that word specifically, to extort from the defendant a pretrial agreement that would result in prison time. They're in the business of turning innocent people into criminals and criminals into convicts and fodder for our metastasizing prison system, which is the largest in human history. There's a terrific, and I mean that word once again in its original sense, meaning terrifying, a terrific book by Harvey Silverglate, who's a law professor, entitled Three Felonies a Day. And what he points out is that any sufficiently depraved and ambitious prosecutor, they tend to be the most depraved and ambitious people in our system, quite frankly, can take any one of us at any time, and on the basis of anything we do that doesn't do any harm to anybody, can find three instances in our waking hours of every day in which we're in technical violation of a federal statute or an administrative decree that's enforced as if it were law, and then put us into a system where we would face a prohibitive penalty in the form of prison time, and then extract from us some plea agreement where we would be guilty of a felony and thereby deprived of, among other things, significant civil rights and one very significant individual right, which is the right to armed self-defense. This is what these people do. That's all they do. They do not do anything that actually conduces to the protection of individual liberty. There was a piece in Slate magazine a couple of years ago talking about a game that is played by junior prosecutors in the Southern Federal District of New York, in which they would identify a prominent celebrity, somebody like, for instance, Mother Teresa or John Lennon, somebody who's not notable, in other words, for committing crimes, somebody who would appear to be a humanitarian of some sort or another. And then they would, having identified the person, they would start trying to build a case to prosecute that person and send that person to prison. How would you send Mother Teresa to prison? How would you send John Lennon to prison? How would you send a philanthropist or a sports celebrity to prison? They would find a crime to fit the person. This is what they do by way of recreation, and it trains their mindset in a certain way. It's Stalin's prosecutor Vyshinsky used to say, "Find me the mind and find me the man, and I'll find the crime." That's how our Sovietized so-called justice system operates.
Well, let me just mention that today in America, one out of every 103 adults is in prison. One out of every 31 adults in America is in prison, probation, or parole. One out of every three young black men between about 19 and 29. One out of every three young black men between 19 and 29 is in prison, probation, or parole today. Why don't we ever talk about this? Why? Because the media is controlled. Because we live in a police state where we have more people in prison in the United States today than any other nation in the world. Per capita, we have almost twice as many as the closest nation to us. Does that suggest we are truly the land of the free and the home of the brave? Or is there some gross perversion going on? And why is this never discussed? One in every three young black men between the ages of 19 and 29 in prison, probation, or parole today. And then we wonder why black people feel that they're being discriminated against in America. Go right ahead.
The reason why we're seeing this is not because we're a healthy society, not because we're a free society, but rather because we are an unfree society that is sick to our very marrow with this perverse philosophy or perverse perspective ideology called positivism. And that's because, as you pointed out so many times, Dr. Stan, we've had our institutions uprooted from the rich and fertile soil of our Judeo-Christian heritage, and then transplanted in an entirely different ideological and theological construct. And that construct, once again, is statism, it's collectivism, it's positivism, it's the idea that man is the measure of all things, and that power is sufficient justification for its own exercise, and that those in power have the privilege of defining the limits of their power, and they can exercise it against whomever they choose for whatever reason strikes them as suitable. And I would refer your readers once again to this website, judicialreformnow.com.
And before we go on, I want you to get out your website. People can get in touch with you.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My website, my chief outlet, is the blog Pro Libertate. If you go to Google or another search engine and type in my name, William N. Grigg, G-R-I-G-G, William N. Grigg, and then Pro Libertate, P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, that should take you to my website. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
And there's a PayPal button at the bottom of every page. And ladies and gentlemen, we support William Grigg. And we hope if you're in a position to, that you will help him as well. He has six children, and certainly he writes our monthly newsletter, but he can certainly use your help. William, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb.
Is it me, or have you noticed that personal service is becoming a thing of the past? Is a big store with untrained personnel, or going to a vitamin store and finding several brands of the same herbal product, all at different prices? You don't need to be an herbal expert at The Green Herb. We'll gladly help you decide which of The Green Herb's exclusive products will work for you and work better than anything you buy elsewhere. And we'll give you an old-fashioned money-back guarantee. Come by The Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website at www.thegreenherb.com. It's The Green Herb's policy to give you small-town service in the big city, and be sure to listen to The Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. This is Pastor Michael Golden. My wife, Danny, and I would like to invite you to join us at the Voice of Many Waters Congregation for a Mikra HaKodesh, a holy convocation, every Saturday, Shabbat, at 1 p.m. at 3J's Christian Coffee House, 21 North Parish Avenue in Johnstown. We'll be having praise and worship, fellowship, midrash teaching and study time, followed by an oneg. Check out our website at www.voiceofmanywaters.org. That's voiceofmanywaters.org. Or call us at 1-303-522-3562. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful.
Well, Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed the program with William Craig. And if you're in a position to help him, why, I certainly do need help. My wife and I help him, and certainly William writes my monthly newsletter, the Radio Liberty Letter, and certainly this is the time I should mention that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and we have well over 50 stations across, or outlets across America. You can hear our programs at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. If you have a cell phone with unlimited minutes or telephone with unlimited minutes, why, you can listen to our afternoon programs 24 hours a day. Certainly, if you have an iPad or iPhone, why, you can listen to our programs 24 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, as you know, we do 5 hours of talk radio a day, trying to sound the alarm because time is getting late. Some very difficult things are going to be happening, and I think that this year, 2013, is going to be a pivotal year in the history of our nation. And the freedoms we know are going to be rapidly dissipated because the good people are so interested in having a good life. They don't understand that freedom is not free. And if we're not trying to protect it, why, freedom will soon be lost, because there really are people, a small group of powerful and evil people who have taken control of our government and are using the financial and military power of the United States to establish a world government. Why do you think we announced in the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks that we're going to send American troops to 35 nations in Africa? What does that have to do with defending America? Do you really think that we're going to establish democracy there, like we recently established democracy in Egypt with Mr. Morsi, trained at the University of Southern California, the new dictator in Egypt? And Egypt is in chaos, as are all of the countries where we provoked this recent revolution. And believe me, if we would destroy freedom in other nations, don't think for 1 minute when the time comes it'll not be destroyed here. In fact, we're already working within our court system to establish the foundation of a dictatorship, and America has far more people in prison per capita than any other nation in the world. Why is that? And why are 1 in 3 young black men in prison, probation, or parole today? Why are 1 in 31 American adults in prison, probation, or parole today? And why don't we ever talk about these things? Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're in a position to help us certainly maintain our network of stations or to expand that network, or give us a call. We'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like a copy of our newsletter or our catalog, or certainly if you'd like to subscribe to our monthly newsletter or help us in any way, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that some of you certainly will want to get the books we have. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, we hope you will. And if you'd like to get a case of the books, at least for the time being, they are available at a special discount rate. And you can get 64 of them for $149.95. And we'll give you either a 4-CD set or a DVD to cover the cost of shipping. And then, of course, we want you to give those books away or to lend them or to sell them. Do whatever you want to, but help people to understand that behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. that are guiding the course of America away from freedom towards tyranny. And it's so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan. Goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com.
Ranch Restaurant in Greeley reminds everyone the difference between a child safe at home and a child missing can be as little as a few simple rules on how to return home. Set a curfew for your child and have them routinely call to check in with you. This reminder is from Ranch Restaurant, 714 6th Street in Greeley, the perfect place for lunch. Call ahead for orders at 970-356-1411. That's 970-356-1411. Ranch Restaurant in Greeley. Colorado Wyoming Outreach and Admissions for Job Corps, celebrating Black History 365 days a year, salutes African American leaders who led the way to equal opportunity. Let's continue to work together for a better place to live for all Americans.